Ryan for the songs that he led us in this morning. Just a moment of praise for God to remember his holiness, his awesomeness. It's exactly what I needed this morning. I also want to echo something that Robert said in his prayer about as we reach out to the lost. Compassion is the word he used, and that goes very closely with what I want to talk about this morning. Let me start in kind of an odd place, and we'll kind of work our way into the middle. So, this is a quote from renowned atheist and writer Richard Dawkins. He says, though the details differ across the world, no known culture lacks some version of the time-consuming, wealth-consuming, hostility-provoking rituals, the antifactual, counterproductive fantasies of religion. When one person suffers from a delusion, it is called insanity. When many people suffer from a delusion, it is called religion. I mean, that's some pretty strong language. And this book, The God Delusion, is worth reading just because it's so it's everywhere in our culture. These kinds of thoughts have really taken root. I think it's important for kind of understanding where the atheist stands. But I don't like this book at all. And it's not because I disagree with the things that Richard Dawkins is saying, but it's because he says them very poorly. And you can see in this the kind of bravado that he brings against Christianity. But when you think about it, that's not really very convincing. Sure, when you are an atheist and you read a book like this, and you know it really gets you drummed up and excited about all the ways in which the Christians are stupid. But no one is going to be convinced by this. It's just you yelling, trying to make other people look stupid and yourself look smart. And there are a lot of ways in which this happens, not only in the realm of religious discussions, but I think especially Facebook, which is why my sermon looks like Facebook this morning. I think also politics. I mean, I'll give you a couple examples. This is from a well-respected conservative commentator. He says, we are a country of fearful, spineless invertebrates. He's talking about COVID-19. And again, it's not very helpful. It's not as if you're trying to reach out to said fearful, spineless invertebrates. It's just a way to make other people look stupid. Similarly, on the other side, you know, lest we think that the conservatives are the only ones that can do this, someone said about Donald Trump on climate change, he says, his speech was a break from centuries of enlightenment and rationality. The president presented his political statement as a nationalistic manifesto of the most imbecilic variety. Again, these are not the kind of words that are intended to be compelling or convincing or make a rational argument. It's just pie on your face, ha, I got you. And when it comes to having discussions about things that really matter, there's got to be a better way. And that's what James presents us with in James chapter 3. He says, who is wise and understanding among you? James 3, verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not be boastful and false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but it is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder in every vile practice. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. And when you look at this list that James presents us with, especially in verses 17 and 18, that the wisdom from above is pure, peaceable, gentle, open to reason, none of the things which we see present in any of these three quotes. And as we go out having discussions with people about the Bible, it is imperative that we choose to have those discussions from a place of wisdom from above, this pure, peaceable, reasonable, gentle kind of conversation, rather than the selfish ambition, the bitter jealousy, this earthly, unspiritual, demonic wisdom that makes us want to have arguments with people that only result in making people angry. And so this morning I want to present, as you can see, there are about 7 things in this list. And I've kind of distilled them down into 3 larger categories. 3 ways in which James tells us we can have better discussions. More productive conversations. Because it's important. When we are having discussions about religion, about Jesus, about this, the most important of things, really, to be able to discuss well, that we do it right. That we do it from a place of serving God, a wisdom from above, and not just trying to make ourselves look smart and everyone else look dumb. So, I've entitled my sermon this morning, Offense and Sensibility. Of course, it's a kind of a parody on sense and sensibility. And this really is the dilemma. As we come into a discussion, we have 2 options. We can choose to be sensible, or we can choose to be offensive. And we need to choose the right path. We need to choose sensibility. And so, as James tells us in his list, in verse 17, the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. Both the first and last of these play into what I will say as we begin, is that the wisdom from above is pure. That is, of course, how he starts. But he also says that the wisdom from above is sincere. And as we have these really important discussions, there is a way to do it purely and sincerely, and there's a way to do it that is not that way. And I just have to say, I think especially as it relates to the way we have discussions about apologetics, that we have done a poor job of really making sure that our conversations are pure and sincere and focused on God. Because there is a way to have this discussion where it is about bringing people to the Lord, about serving God, about ultimately God being glorified. And then there's a whole different kind of discussion that's finding all the tiny nitpicky flaws in what people are saying, and then just really jamming it in there, really sticking it to them, having these mic drop moments and feeling amazing. And I've been in like so many apologetics classes that are just that. They're like, here's, you know, exactly what you can say in this situation to really trip them up. You know, oh, you think that? You know, you're stupid. You know, what about transition fossils? Or, you know, you come at it from a moral angle. It's, oh, yeah, well, you don't believe that God exists. Well, you don't believe in morality, so you probably eat babies. And it's like, no, no. When we have discussions, again, the way we go about this, it will become immediately apparent whether we are trying to make ourselves look smart and other people look stupid, or whether we are trying to have a real discussion and trying to serve the Lord. And when the wisdom from above is pure, when it is sincere, when our discussions are purely focused on doing the will of God, it's going to become apparent. Let me show you a biblical example of someone who did not do that. And one of the things that will become immediately apparent is that we can be talking about the same thing. We can be talking about a very spiritual topic. You can be speaking the truth. But if it's not with the wisdom from above, then you're doing a disservice to yourselves and to the cause of Christ. Here's what Paul says in Philippians chapter 1. He says, most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. Some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment. What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in that I rejoice. What Paul is saying here is that there are people who are preaching the truth. And I think that is apparent, that we're not talking about false teachers here when he's calling out these envious, rivalry, selfish ambition, not sincerely kind of people. I think they're speaking the truth. I think they're teaching the truth, the true gospel. Because Paul says, look, Christ is being proclaimed, and I will at least rejoice in that. But they're doing it out of selfish motives. They're doing it to afflict Paul. They're doing it maybe to look good, maybe to heap praise on themselves. Somehow, they are doing this, but it's not from sincere motives. And Paul sees right through that. And I've underlined these 4 things because these poor motives are either under the list in James 3 of things that describe the wisdom from below, or their opposite is described in the wisdom from above. And so we see textbook case of what James is talking about here, that there are people who are teaching the truth, but they're doing it for themselves. They're doing it out of not pure, not sincere motives. Because we can't be like that. Let me show you instead another example, this time also from Paul, but we'll turn here because it was too big to put on my PowerPoint. This is 1 Corinthians chapter 2. In 1 Corinthians chapter 2, we'll read the first five verses. Paul says, "And I, when I came to you, brothers, did not come proclaiming to you the testimony of God with lofty speech or with wisdom, for I decided to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. And I was with you in weakness and in fear and much trembling, and my speech and my message were not in plausible words of wisdom, but in a demonstration of the Spirit and of power, so that your faith might not rest in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God." Paul says, my message is to preach Christ crucified. My goal is that you believe in Christ crucified. I have, you know, no other objectives. Like Jesus, you know, God's will is Paul's will. And he says, look, there are a lot of ways in which I could have, you know, come at you with fancy rhetoric. I could have done all these things. But ultimately, Paul's message to them is coming from a place of purity and sincerity. And he's coming to them, he says, in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. That Paul is not afraid to look the fool, to look weak in his presentation of the gospel, as opposed to some of these other people who are really trying to bolster their reputation, really trying to win points with others. And I think this becomes especially apparent when we look at something Paul says elsewhere in 2 Corinthians. He says, "We are fools for Christ's sake, but you are wise in Christ. We are weak, but you are strong. You are held in honor, but we in disrepute. To the present hour, we hunger and thirst, we are poorly dressed and buffeted and homeless, and we labor, working with our own hands. When reviled, we bless. When persecuted, we endure. When slandered, we entreat. We have become and are still like the scum of the world, the refuse of all things." There are those who would preach Christ, as Paul says in Philippians, in order to gain selfish gain, that they are seeking an opportunity to glorify their own selves, to advance their own agendas, to make themselves look really awesome and other people look really stupid. And then there's Paul, who says, you know what? I'm the scum of the world, the refuse of all things. Like, Paul does not care what other people think about him as long as the gospel is being preserved, as long as the gospel is being proclaimed. And I think ultimately that's really going to be the test. As you look at yourself and the way that you're presenting the gospel, and the way that you're trying to teach people the truth. Sure, you can be teaching the truth, but if you're teaching it in such a way where it's really important to you that you look good while doing it, if it's really important to you that you get some gain out of this, if you read Paul's words that he was the scum of the world, the refuse of all things, and you think, you know what, that's not really for me. If you find out that you were wrong about something, and it's really hard for you to go back and swallow your pride, these are all red flags to you that the wisdom from above is pure and sincere, and that purity and sincerity is not present in the way you're presenting the gospel. And so we must be on guard that when we share the gospel, when we talk about these really, really important things, that we do it from a place of purity and sincerity. But the second thing, we'll come back to James chapter 3. We'll read it again. James chapter 3, verses 15 through 18. "This is not the wisdom that comes from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and every vile practice. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And the harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." The second thing that the wisdom from above is peaceable. And he says this in lots of different ways. Gentle, open to reason, full of mercy. And this also is pretty much apparent from the get-go. If you are coming out with people with fighting words, or if you're coming at them in a way that's trying to be helpful, It's a whole different thing. Like, you don't call someone's discussion a nationalistic manifesto of the most imbecilic variety if you're trying to make friends with them. And we can fall prey to this, as I said, even in our religious discussions. I'll give you an example. And to this guy's credit, I tried to find this on his Facebook, and I could not find it. So maybe he deleted it. Maybe he got wise. But anyway, this is something, a real discussion I saw on somebody's Facebook. He posted some picture of making fun of evolution. Again, I don't believe in evolution, but he was making fun of it. And his friend felt offended, and he said something. These are approximations, but these are his exact words in response. He said, "You're an idiot." And then he says, "So, one more topic goes by on which Greg knows nothing, but he keeps opening his mouth. Sad." And first of all, sad is not a sentence. Second of all, who talks like this? Why do we feel a need to yell at people like this, to use these fighting words, when the wisdom from above is peaceable? It is immediately apparent when we discuss with people whether we are trying to do this to, you know, make them look bad, whether we're trying to make to take this opportunity to really bolster ourselves, or whether we're doing this from the heart, whether we're trying to make peace. And here, again, we can look to Paul and see examples of, even within the church, I mean, there are going to be times when we're going to disagree, when we need to have really serious discussions, where it's really important that we do this well. And here's the advice Paul has. He says, "Brothers, if anyone is caught in a transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness." He says in 2 Thessalonians, "Do not regard him as an enemy, but warn him as a brother." The idea here is that we are taking these opportunities to make peace, to find reconciliation, that we're not trying to fight people, we're not trying to attack people or put people down. Our goal, first and always, is that the truth can be taught. And that when it is taught, it is... Ultimately, let me actually just rephrase that. Our goal, first and always, is that God be glorified. And God is glorified when the truth is taught. But the truth must be taught well, in order for God to be glorified. And when we are coming at people, trying to attack them, trying to make them feel bad, that's not going to help. It's not going to help. Because the wisdom from above is peaceable. The wisdom from above is gentle, full of mercy, open to reason. And let me just say here, that the gospel is already offensive enough without us helping. I mean, like, if you talk to somebody who's in an adulterous marriage, and you say, "You're in an adulterous marriage, God does not approve of your marriage." I mean, it does not matter how nicely you say that, that's an offensive thing to say. But that's what God teaches. And so, like, we have to teach the truth, and the truth of the gospel is offensive, inherently. But there is no reason to add more offense to that than necessary. There is no reason for us to cause people to be pushed away from God because we handled the message poorly. And so as we're taking the message out, it needs to be from purity, it needs to be from sincerity, but it also needs to be peaceable, gentle. In any opportunity, if at all possible, we need to present the message as kindly, as gently as we can possibly muster, because that's what the message deserves. That's what God deserves as his messengers. And that leads us finally to our last one. Again, we'll read our text again, verses 16 through 18. "Where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and every vile practice. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." What we see here, and also contrasted with the wisdom from below, and even before that, in the way that James talks about the tongue, is that the wisdom from above is productive, but the wisdom from below is destructive. We can see in verse 18 that a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. We can see on the flip side that this wisdom from below is unspiritual, demonic, It's full of jealousy, of disorder. We can see if we go back further into James 3 that the tongue itself is a fire. It says in 3 verse 6, the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and set on fire by hell. James is saying that the tongue is a very dangerous thing, and we can use it in very destructive ways. And yet the wisdom from above demands of us that we take our message not to tear people down, but to bring about reconciliation. Because that's what God wanted when he made his church. In Ephesians chapter 2, it says, "But now in Christ Jesus, you who once were far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. For he himself is our peace, who has made us both one, and has broken down in his flesh the dividing wall of hostility by abolishing the law of commandments expressed in ordinances, that he might create in himself one new man in the place of two, so making peace, and might reconcile us both to God in one body through the cross, thereby killing the hostility." That when we are preaching in such a way that brings reconciliation, that brings building up, that brings a harvest of righteousness, when you're teaching in a way that is productive, then you can be sure that that is coming from the wisdom from above. But there is also, again, the wisdom from below that can be destructive even when we're sharing the truth. And the textbook place to go for this is Romans 14. He says, "So let us pursue what makes for peace and for mutual upbuilding. Do not for the sake of food destroy the work of God. Everything indeed is clean, but it's wrong for anyone to make another stumble by what he eats. It is good not to eat meat or to drink wine or to do anything that causes your brother to stumble." What Paul is saying here, and we can discuss like what he means by wine, but what he's saying here is that there are people in your congregation who are strong, who know the truth, that say it's okay for us to eat meat, it's okay for us to drink wine. And there are other people in your congregation who are offended by that. And he says, you've got two choices. Those of you who are wise, those of you who know the truth, you can either press your liberty to such an extent that, you know, oh, I'm seeking the truth, that you just blast over the other people and you cause fissures, you cause all kinds of problems and divisions, not because you're trying to teach the truth. I mean, let's be honest here. It's because you were so insistent on your liberty that you just ran over somebody else. Or we can choose to have productive conversations that build people up, that do not insist on our own liberties, that do not insist on selfishness, and instead work together and choose to not eat meat or drink wine or do anything that causes your brother to stumble. That in this example, we have Paul teaching us that as we are carrying the gospel around, as we're carrying the truth around, as we're having these important discussions, both with people in the world and also people within these walls, that if you are insisting on your own way, if you're so focused on yourself that even the way you carry the truth is causing problems among your brothers, is exacerbating these kind of factions, we got to think of a better way to do this. And as James teaches us, this better way is the wisdom from above. It is pure, it is peaceable, it is productive. He says the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere, and a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. This is our message. This is our goal. As we speak both with each other as Christians and with people out in the world that we are trying to encourage, we are trying to bring into the fold of Jesus, we have to do it with the wisdom from above and not with the wisdom from below. We don't need to be pushing people away. We don't need to be creating problems that don't need to be problems. Instead, we need to check our hearts for sincerity and purity. Am I doing this because I want to look cool, because I want to be the right one, because it's important to me, you know, to be right when everyone else is wrong? Or am I doing this because I love God and I want his truth to reign supreme? Am I in the way that I'm doing this? Am I using fighting words? Am I, you know, being unkind, ungentle, unmerciful? Or am I choosing peace in whatever way possible to be peaceful? And finally, is the way that I'm carrying the truth around producing good things, producing reconciliation, building people up, or is it causing problems? Is it tearing things down that God works so hard to bring together? These are the questions we must ask ourselves as we open our mouths, as we speak the truth, both to each other and to the people in the world. Are we operating with the wisdom from above or the wisdom from below? Again, James brings us an incredibly practical and honestly, like, toe-stomping message that when we carry the word of God around, we got to do it right. We have to do it from the wisdom from above. And so this morning, I don't know the state of all of you in the audience, but if you're out there and you've never become a Christian, let me tell you, Jesus is the one and only way to heaven. And that is, in some ways, a controversial message, because if Jesus is the one and only way, then that means that there are no other ways. But Jesus is also a good shepherd. Jesus is also full of love. He is love. And he will take care of you in ways that never before have you understood. And so if you want to be a Christian, we would love to talk with you about the changes that Jesus, as the King, commands in your life, but also the love and the brotherhood that comes with being a Christian. But for those, the many of you, the vast majority of you, who have already put on Christ in baptism, who have already chosen that this is your path, then take this message, reflect on it. How do we share the gospel well? It's from the wisdom. It has to be with the wisdom from above. Take that, let it sink into your hearts. Make it a part of your prayers as you are shaping your heart to serve God out in the world. And if we can pray with you or help you in any way, we ask that you would come as we stand here and sing.